Hello, welcome to an InsideCollegeHockey.com summertime podcast for June 25th, 2008. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, podcast host, and I'm joined on this certainly what is destined to be a high deterioration podcast by Mike Eidelbiss and Jess Myers. Happy summertime, fellas.
Happy summertime. I forgot to get you a card.
It's okay. It's okay.
Did we have like a summer solstice celebration that I wasn't invited to?
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did. It was in Ottawa.
It was in Ottawa. We celebrated the shortest night of the year by staying up for its entirety.
You did.
So that was a good time.
Yeah.
You kind of pulled one of those like golfing all night in Fairbanks kind of things where you tee off at midnight.
Yeah. There wasn't any golfing, but there was some teeing off.
Spent a good time with Pat Buckle.
Spent a lot of time in the rough.
Yeah. Anyway.
Night putting. Just putting at night.
I had some bad lies.
Buss and I were in Ottawa for the National Hockey League entry draft. We'll talk more on that later. Well, we'll try to start this out with some sort of college hockey discussion. And we'll talk about some of the players that won't be back with their respective college hockey teams next season, choosing to forego remaining collegiate eligibility and sign professional contracts. Certainly at the top of that list, no surprise, Kyle Turris actually signed with Phoenix right after Wisconsin was eliminated from the NCAA tournament. Nathan Gerby, TJ Oshie, Blake Wheeler.
Turris actually signed in the handshake line, didn't he?
I think so. I think he had a pen in his left hand.
Took a break from shaking hands. Hang on, I got to sign this. Okay, I'll be back.
Yeah, exactly. Tim Kennedy and Justin Ablicator for Michigan State and goalies Jeff Zadkoff of Miami and Ben Bishop of Maine were the main names. Certainly others had impacts on their teams as well, but those are probably the top-flight guys who you'd consider to be maybe Hobie-level players or certainly All-American-type players. One thing that we talked about, Buss, in the 10-for-08 series, or I'm sorry, 10-for-09 series, was even with Gerby's signing, we still think Boston College is the number one team heading into next season.
Yeah, I think they are. In fact, when you kind of look at the top 10 that we put together, I think they're a pretty clear cut number one. John Muse obviously played very well down the stretch for them. And he's going to come back with a full year of experience and another year of maturity, and he won't be this wide-eyed freshman to start the season. He'll be a battle-tested sophomore. They do lose Gerby, but there's still a lot of offensive firepower there, and they'll be another year better on defense. And I think that getting to watch that team down the stretch, their defense is vastly underrated, and I think they're going to be a pretty important part of this club this year. And I think people will take notice of them with guys like Petrecki back there and Sneap and others. And, they've got some good kids coming in, too. And one we saw at the draft, Jimmy Hayes, didn't play all that well last year. I kind of split the season between the National Development Program in Ann Arbor and the USHL, but he's a big kid at 6'4", and I think if he ends up on a line with somebody like a Ben Smith or a Whitney and can just concentrate maybe on going to the net and just being that big guy in front, he's going to pick up some goals, especially with the way those guys distribute the puck.
Another kind of addition for Boston College is going to be Brock Bradford. He missed most of the season last year due to injury, but he's expected to come back at full strength, and that's adding a high-level forward right to your lineup, even though he's not an incoming recruit. What kind of shape is North Dakota in, Jess, after graduation and some of the early signings that they faced?
The the big questions, obviously, for North Dakota are going to be in goal number one, with Jean-Philippe Lamoureux bowing out his college hockey career, ending kind of on a down note. It was interesting, you know, a couple of pretty highly touted senior goaltenders, Jean-Philippe Lamoureux and Peter Menino in Denver, both had just crappy games for the last games, and you hate to see them go out that way, but that's just the way this game goes. With that said, North Dakota's bringing in a ton of young talent. It seems like, you know, this is a recurring theme. I was lucky enough, I had to go to Faribault on some family business last night, and, you know, it's all but, you know, you drive into Faribault, Minnesota, home of Shattuck St. Mary's, and they might as well have a sign that says, you know, home of the Fighting Sioux, because Shattuck has been such a talent pool for them, and I know, you know, like, it was interesting to see the Hextall kid is going to follow, not in his dad's footsteps, but in his grandfather's footsteps. Dennis Hextall played at North Dakota back in the 50s, and I can't remember his first name now, but Ron Hextall's son is going to be there next year. So I think they'll be all right. I would still pick them as a top three team in the WCHA, but, you know, definitely some question marks about areas they've got to fill some holes.
Well, Michigan State loses two big-time scorers in addition to a defenseman. I think the impact that may have on the Spartans is that if the spotlight wasn't exclusively on Jeff Lurg last year, it certainly will be this year. He's a guy who certainly could put together a senior season, the kind of regular season maybe that Lamoureux had last year for North Dakota, and he'll go a long way toward determining how successful or unsuccessful that Michigan State team is.
Yeah, no question.
Hey, one quick question back to BC, and this may be a dumb question, but God knows I've asked those before. Bus, you talked about their defense. Brett Motherwell, is he out of school? Is he done? Was it a one-year suspension, or is he gone?
He's gone.
He signed a pro
contract.
Oh, he is gone. Okay. I just remember he'd gotten, you know, that thing real early in the season, and he was predicted to be a big-time defenseman for them. So, all right. Well, close the book on that one.
I think the only defenseman they lost was Brennan. From graduation, obviously Motherwell was gone earlier. And Brennan was a good player. I mean, we probably should have mentioned him in talking about BC, a really underrated player.
He did all the
dirty work and did it well. Let's put it that
and
way.
And he did all the PR work. I mean,
he was a
strong representative of that program, you know, and I think allowed being kind of the voice of the Eagles and the character of the Eagles, he wore the C for that team, kind of let the Kirby's and Ferrios and Ben Smiths and Joe Whitney's and those kinds of guys just go out and score goals. So his impact, I think, in the room might be felt as much or more than his impact on the ice. Both will be significant. There's no question about that.
You guys mentioned Sneap, too, and if you remember, he got hurt in the national championship game. I actually talked to Jerry York about a month ago, and he said he's fine. It was a knee thing, but it was just a tweak. It wasn't anything that required surgery, so he will be back at full strength, at least in training camp next year.
Some guys that we think may not be back to college hockey, I guess we'll transition into some draft chatter here, Bus. Colin Wilson of Boston University was taken 7th overall by the Nashville Predators. A team traded up. They traded up 2 picks to get him and make that selection at number 7. And he seemed quite confident and excited in his draft night commentary during the first round on Friday that he's not coming back to college. It could happen, but the types of answers he was giving and the opportunity there is for him on a Nashville team, he may be also joining the early departure list.
Yeah, I think it's just based, you know, when you go to these draft things, you get a lot of the media, you know, kind of asking you those leading questions about, you know, playing in the pros, and a lot of the times, you know, to their credit, the college guys you know, really do a good job of handling those things, saying, you know, that's a long ways away, I got a college career, blah, blah, blah. Colin Wilson was I guess, very direct in relaying the information that he thought he was ready. He would be ready to play in the NHL next season. And you know, he's got the size and he's got the skill. And I don't think that he's the kind of player that would need to spend a lot of time in the minors, obviously, if at all. And, you know, the Nashville system doesn't have a lot of forward talent, readily available in those ranks. And he would be, I think, a pretty good addition to that team. You know, they kind of need that bigger centerman and, you know, somebody that can, he can play a two-way game. And I think kind of grow into an offensive force as he matures. And, from the sounds of what he was saying, it's possible that he could come back to BU, but I wouldn't say it's probable. I think that he's wearing Predators colors come fall.
Another thing that people might want to bring up is that there were only four first-round picks this year who were either college players or college-bound players. I don't think that's something that anybody should read anything into. I mean, these are cycle things, and they base these things on birth years, and I think that what we've seen in the last couple of years, especially recently, was a much higher number of talent taken in the first round and early in the other rounds. I mean, just more overall numbers and more higher numbers of draft picks. So this year wasn't really the case with that, but I don't think there's anything to be read into that.
No, I don't. I would agree. And, you know, if you go back and look at the breakdown, sure, there were only four in the first round, and it was really a strange year because it seemed like really the high-end guys were, first of all, a lot of defensemen. And a lot of OHL guys from the Ontario Hockey League with pretty decent showing from Western League guys, from the Quebec League not so much, in college, you know, four guys. But you go in the second, third, and fourth rounds where that's where you saw a lot of the college kids go. I think I made a quick count the other day, and I think it was 27 guys in those three rounds. And you know, obviously, you know, and we've kind of said this over the past couple of years, you know, the first round is where those guys kind of get the glory and the spotlight. But you know, in those second, third, fourth, fifth rounds, that's where you build your championship teams, and that's where you fill in the pieces. And you know, to see 27 college kids go out of 90 or so picks in there, it's, I think, a pretty strong statement as far as what the NHL people think about kids that are going the college hockey route.
I agree. Two particularly compelling names out of the second round. For me, it's Corey Trevino, a forward who's going to Boston University. And may be asked to pick up even more of the scoring slack than earlier anticipated with, as you and I seem to think, Colin Wilson will be on his way out the door at BU. And Aaron Ness, a defenseman headed to the Minnesota Gophers, doesn't have a lot of size, but can really wheel and deal and skate. And he wasn't the only offensive-type defenseman in the college world who was taken pretty highly in the draft last weekend.
Well, Jake Gardner, who's going to Wisconsin, you know, who went, I think it was, what, 12th overall? He went pretty high in
16.
The first round.
I think it was, no, Colburn went 16.
I thought Colburn was 15, but...
Oh, something around there. I think it was 20.
Was 17.
I think it was 21.
Okay.
Because Anaheim...
Anyway, the comparison is they're both forwards who converted to defense and had a lot of success at the high school level. Ness, as you mentioned, you know, going to Minnesota, he was Minnesota's Mr. Hockey last year, which, you know, goes to the top high school player in the state. Interesting case, he was technically a junior in high school last year, but took an accelerated class level so he could graduate a year early. He took basically twice as many classes as everybody else. He's graduating a year early and is going to start at Minnesota essentially when he would be a senior in high school. So quite a departure from the kids who go play USHL for 2 years and start college when they're 21. He's actually starting a year early, and we'll be interested to see how that works out.
Yeah, those are some of the guys. Joel Colburn, we mentioned, he's a forward, and he's on his way to Denver next year. He was another first-rounder. And the fourth first-rounder from the college ranks was Dalton Lavelle, a forward who is on his way to Michigan State. So those were the guys.
You know, there's one, there's one more interesting situation in the second round, and that's Zach Delpy, who's from Penticton. He's an Ontario kid who played in the British Columbia Hockey League last year. And he's off to, well, at this point in time, Ohio State. And he was taken by Carolina in the second round. Now, his OHL rights, since he's an Ontario kid, are owned by Plymouth. And Plymouth is owned by Peter Karmanos, who just happens to also own the Carolina Hurricanes. And I know there was a report, and I think it was out of the Columbus paper, where Delpy already said that you know, he's hearing from Plymouth, and you know, they're kind of putting the squeeze on him a little bit to go that route, obviously, because there's that Carolina connection. So you know, he said that he's, you know, committed right now to Ohio State, and but at this point, you know, it's certainly something that warrants keeping an eye on here as the summer progresses and we start to get into the fall. You know, Ohio State had put together a pretty good recruiting class this year, and they had some, you know, they had some pretty solid kids on their team last year. So there's some talent there in Columbus. So, but it certainly warrants keeping an eye on, as I'm sure Zach Delpy is going to continue feeling the pressure from Carolina and Plymouth to go the major junior route.
Yeah. And yet, now that you bring that up, two other college notes that we found particularly interesting. The Montreal Canadiens and Toronto Maple Leafs were both used high draft picks to select college-bound players. The Maple Leafs taking Jimmy Hayes, who we mentioned earlier, on his way to Boston College, and the Canadiens taking Danny Christo, who is on his way to North Dakota, eventually. To see the crush of Canadian media, Ottawa is geographically located between Montreal and Toronto. There were about 30 people there. This was in the second round. This wasn't even in the first round on Friday night. About 30 people who wanted to find out all they could about these kids. And being there and standing there with a college perspective, we think of these kids as college players, not as Maple Leafs, not as Canadians. And I was looking around at all these other media saying, I wonder if they'll ever come to a Frozen Four. But, of course, they won't. But it's it was just one of those things that kind of struck me that, you know, having the attention of so many people when you're, you know, just selected by the Canadians or Maple Leafs, those organizations, it's pretty remarkable. Certainly a lot more media than they've ever faced after a USHL game.
That's the truth. Toronto actually took four college kids this year, kids with college ties, I should say. I think that's the same as they took in the previous 20 years combined.
Exactly.
They're not known as a real college-friendly organization. But, hey, you know, to start.
Something that really caught my eye, especially looking at that second round, Wisconsin's upcoming defensive core is I think you could start an expansion NHL team with the at least on paper talent they've got on defense at Wisconsin. You start with Jamie McBain, who was a second rounder a couple of years ago, and they, 2006 he was a second rounder. Then Cody Golubov, 37th overall. Gardner goes 17th overall. This Patrick Weirkoch, I believe his name is?
I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Yeah, be careful with that one. Just you don't want to get bleeped again. Just be careful. He goes 42nd overall, and then Justin Schultz, who is a 2009 recruit, goes 43rd overall. So, you know, at least some scouts are thinking pretty highly of some of the defensemen that Mike Eaves is recruiting to play for the Badgers.
What year was Ryan Suter? Would he have been a senior this upcoming season?
That's a good question.
Or is he older than that?
He was drafted in... He was taken in the Nashville draft, which I think was... And I am just completely guessing here.
Well, there was Columbus, Ottawa, and Vancouver, right? Since Nashville?
Yeah, Vancouver was 06. Right?
Yeah, Suter played 1 year at Wisconsin.
The lockout year was 05.
That was the year that Suter played at Wisconsin.
05 was the year?
Yeah, 04, 05. So he would have been drafted in 04. So, yeah, this would have been his senior year last year.
He would have just completed his senior year.
Okay. Yep. But even, I mean...
That's neither here nor there. I was just curious about it.
That's good.
He just signed a real nice contract extension.
Yes,
too.
He did. Was that today or yesterday? Or last week, actually?
I think it was last week, yeah.
They had the other guy yesterday.
Shea Weber. Was that the guy they signed yesterday?
Exactly.
And they signed, obviously, the goalie, Dan Ellis, from Nebraska Omaha.
They did.
Got a nice nice little chunk of change.
All right.
Is
Ellis going to be their number one? Is Ellis going to be their number one guy now?
Mason's gone.
He led the
NHL in save percentage last year. I think he was like a 938 or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And Ray Emery's looking for work if they need a backup.
He is.
You've probably heard a little bit about that in Ottawa.
Not really.
No, I think it was.
But that was our selective consumption of media.
Well, I think it was more of good riddance.
Yeah, it wasn't a surprise. It wasn't newsworthy because everybody knew it was going to happen.
Sure.
Well, let's,
we've been far too serious for a summertime podcast.
Actually, I wanted to bring one more thing up about this Wisconsin defense. Let's say that they, you've got the four guys that were drafted. I think it was four guys that were drafted. Actually, three guys that were drafted this year. The one first and the two seconds. McDonough was drafted last year. He was a first rounder. And Brendan Smith, who I think played defense for them, who was a first rounder last year. And then you've got McBain, who was a second rounder in 06. So you've got six defensemen who went in the first 60 picks of the NHL draft. That's, and granted, draft position does not necessarily translate into excellence, but, that's pretty good. You're starting with pretty good stock, let's just put it that way.
So, Jason Bonsignor disagrees with you.
Who's that?
Jason Bonsignor disagrees with you.
Well, as he should.
Draft status is the only judge of talent.
I like the fact that you've been in Canada for a few days, though, because you say status, not status. That's outstanding.
Process.
I'm going back this weekend. I liked it so much, I'm going back this weekend.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
No, you talk about Wisconsin, though, Bus, and everyone says, Shane Connolly had a disappointing year. With that kind of defense in front of him, does it matter?
Well, yeah, it does. You got to stop the shots.
Yeah.
And he did probably play his best hockey late in the season. I mean,
he needs to be consistent. I mean,
he was the photo negative of the likes of Peter Menino and Jean-Philippe Lamoureux. He actually, ended the season playing his best hockey.
Yeah. All right. Anything else that's significant and newsworthy, or can we start to deteriorate?
There's probably something, but I can't think of it.
If we get to it, we'll get to it.
They changed some rules, but
that's boring.
Yeah, you'll find that out when you go to the rink.
Exactly.
Everybody has two refs and
face-offs are on face-off dots and
that's
crap like that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the face-offs are on the face-off desk.
You know, I should bring something up, or I'm going to bring something up just because I read the release today. UMass released their schedule today, and the icebreaker is at Agganis Arena this year, Boston University, and the four teams are BU, UMass, Michigan State, and North Dakota. So not a bad little tourney there to kick off the year.
That is a good one. That is a good one. Another thing I saw today was ECAC Hockey released its composite schedule for all the 12-member teams. And
it had 16 games on it.
Yeah, one of the issues that I've chronicled in my notebook for those two fans out there who actually read it has been the struggle of the non-IV members of ECAC Hockey to fill their non-conference games. I think there's a 36 to 37 game limit in your overall schedule, and you only play 22 league games in ECAC Hockey, so that leaves quite a glut of games to fill, and many teams do that by playing in as many tournaments as they can. I think Colgate is playing actually in two separate Christmas tournaments. They're in Omaha for the Stampede, and then heading out to, I think, the Catamount Cup. And don't hold me, I'm trying to go on memory from something I read at noon. But
what's that? You must have had a heck of a lunch.
Business lunch.
The businessman special. It's only Tuesday.
So that's one of the things. And actually, I think there'll probably be more teams than just Colgate, because this year the way that the New Year's Day holiday falls is, I think it's on a Saturday or a Friday.
Thursday.
It's a Thursday, so a Friday-Saturday tournament is going to be maybe preferred, because if you played that week between Christmas and New Year's, it would be the 26th and 27th, which is kind of awfully quick to get people back to campus if they were to go home for the holiday break and, you know, all those kinds of funny little travel things. So there are some holiday tournaments taking place all over the map that weekend.
I heard they're doing it different. They're actually in a Christmas tournament, and right before that, they're in a Hanukkah tournament this year. Is that true?
I don't know.
I think it's Kwanzaa.
I think that's long overdue. The
Kwanzaa tournament?
Hanukkah tournament, yeah.
Plus, do you still have the Festivus soundbite, Andy?
I don't have it on me.
Yeah.
Festivus tournament.
Festivus classic.
Yeah.
In Queens.
All right.
North Dakota is also in the icebreaker. Well, they're in the icebreaker, obviously. They're
so
also
instead of a shootout, would they have feats of strength at the very end?
I think so. Airing of grievances, then. Feats of strength. Maybe the grievances come after. And in the handshake line.
In the outside the ref locker room.
North Dakota.
The Minnesota State must be there.
Oh.
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 Okay.
North Dakota's in the GLI this year, by the way. Just in case you're looking ahead. Looking to visit Detroit in late December.
So, speaking with someone who's close to the Toronto Maple Leafs organization at the draft, they had this funny story to tell regarding former Minnesota Gopher John Pohl. And a defense prospect, he's a prospect, who spent some time in the show and with the Maple Leafs minor league affiliate, the Toronto Marlies. Guy is huge dude, but he doesn't have a lot of sandpaper to his game. And I guess John Pohl,
He's also, can we say where he went to school? He went to school. He went to college.
I did not realize that.
Yeah, he went to he played at Wisconsin.
He played at Wisconsin.
That's all you need to know.
And John Pohl said to this guy, "You're the biggest guy I know who wears a visor." And it was funny to us.
Well, it was funny because
it was funny.
It's funny because it's true.
It was true. And it was fun.
And if you're from the Don Cherry School of pro hockey, you should
Well, we've long admitted that we've watched far too much Coach's Corner for our own good.
Right. Yeah.
If you are going to Ottawa and you do not have much familiarity with the city and the stadium, do not think that the city of Ottawa is where the Scotiabank Place is located, because it's about 25 miles away from the actual city of Ottawa.
It's in Kingston.
Kanata.
Yeah, Kanata. No, I know it was Kanata. It just seemed like it was in Kingston.
Seemed like it was in freaking Calgary.
North Bay, Ontario.
Yeah, it was Guelph.
Guelph.
It's a nice rink.
Yeah, very, very, very nice facility. It's just you're not going to be able to walk there,
right,
from a downtown hotel if you think that is the case. So, plan on that.
And if you were,
we're not putting it on our Frozen Four wish list.
I would put it on my Frozen
incorrect.
Four wish
list. I would put it on my Frozen Four wish list.
Very good downtown.
Oh, great, great Frozen City. Other than the fact it's not in the United States and the rink is not in the city.
But that's okay.
But everything else, they get 4 stars.
Did you try to skate on the canal and get all wet because it was June?
No.
Okay.
We saw the canal, however.
Yes.
It's a very integral part of the city. The Rideau Canal.
It's a big deal.
It is a big
deal.
I don't know that I'd want to see it this summer. I'm guessing a lot of cigarette butts and stuff.
No.
Very
keep it clean?
Very cool.
Oh, yeah, blue water.
Canada generally is a pretty clean country.
They
clean up after themselves well.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm heading to TDOT this weekend.
An endorsement for Ottawa. I would say if you're looking for a fairly out of the way, or a city where not a lot of people go. I mean, there's still obviously a lot of people around there. There's a million people in Ottawa. But a lot of stuff to see there. People are friendly.
Yeah, there's government, there's history, there's sports, there's museums, there's obviously the canal and some touristy type attractions.
It's a very nice town. Very nice.
Yeah, I think it's a better summer destination than winter destination.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, then you miss out on the hockey.
Right.
So,
Are they bilingual there? Do they announce everything in English and French?
They do.
Okay.
Well, it sits very, very close to the Quebec border.
It's close.
Right, it's right across the river.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So.
And I suppose being the national capital, there's kind of a
there's a little
mandate
bit
to do the bilingual thing. I grew up close to Canada, but I grew up close to Manitoba, and they kind of scoff at the whole notion of
America
the
Junior.
Thing. Right.
What else do we have to deteriorate? We haven't deteriorated on.
You were going
Stanley
to the
Cup playoffs.
You're going to the TO though.
I'm going to Toronto. Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch baseball in Canada. It's awesome. I'll also be attending the Hockey Hall of Fame.
That's awesome also.
Yeah, that is awesome. If you haven't been, you got to go to that.
And it's been refurbished within the last, 5 years or so?
Yeah, it's just top shelf anyway. It's really good.
No, yeah.
My neighbor came up to me tonight asking me if I had any connections with the Hockey Hall of Fame, by the way, because he thinks it's a crime that Dino Cicerelli has not been inducted yet. Long-standing North Star fans out there, they still remember Dino the Dinosaur.
There you go.
So, see if you can talk to somebody for me when you're there, will you, buddy?
That's not a high priority for me.
Darn it.
But I'll put it at the bottom of the list.
Okay.
All right, so it's on the list. It's on the list.
Yeah. Glenn Anderson.
You got it on the list.
Glenn Anderson's in, though. University of Denver.
Yeah.
Well, one season, at least.
Oh, I got a deterioration.
Dougie Gilmore,
by
the way. Dougie Gilmore's got to get in before Dino.
He'll never make it in.
There's no way he'll make it in.
If Mike Myers has a vote, he'll get in.
You don't think Mike Myers does not have a vote.
He actually named his dog after Doug Gilmore, believe it or not.
Good on him.
Okay, yeah. What's your deterioration, Cox?
Bus, great news for you. If you look at Mike's Facebook page, you'll know why. Hot rumor out of Denver. I was there a couple weeks ago, talked to some high-level sources within the DU Athletic Department. Denver Boone is rumored to be making a comeback as the official logo of the Denver Pioneers. One of only two college logos designed by Walt Disney himself. So,
yeah.
What was the other?
The University of Oregon Duck was the other.
I can see it resemble.
I was going to say the University of Miami Mermaids, but no, I guess not.
No, probably not.
Yeah, you know, I was
Miami.
I was on the Denver website, and they had us. They had a. I'm not sure if it was just for people affiliated with the university. Or what, but they had a little icon that you clicked on and had a some sort of like survey about Boone. And you know, if you don't know who Boone is, he's the kind of the cuddly little prospector.
He's a pioneer. He wears a coonskin cap.
Yeah, and he's got an Amish beard. sort of a roly-poly little fellow. Anyway, so they had a kind of question about, what do you think about Boone? Does he, does there need to be a female Boone? Do you, is it okay that he doesn't look mean? And anyways, it sounds like he's coming back, so.
He's an upgrade from the Flying Burrito.
He is. He's an upgrade from the,
the Red Tail Hawk?
From the,
yeah, whatever.
From the Raspberry.
They won two national titles with that baby.
He's an upgrade from the half-eaten raspberry Danish.
Yeah.
One other quick DU note. Congratulations to Eric Bacher, longtime SID there. He and his girlfriend Carly got engaged recently, and a wedding is forthcoming. And Carly, during the
is that what happens?
That's usually how it works, isn't it?
proved that not only is she a great person and great fun, but she's an awful good sport. We found that out one night during the Frozen Four. So, congratulations to the two of them. Yeah, we did.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Think real hard, and you'll know what I'm talking about.
The Puerto Rico Fog Bank.
Something like that. Oh.
All right.
Passing in a mudslide.
Let's go.
it involves pillows and trail mix, and I can't say anymore.
Let's go to
Jeff Howe?
The Stanley Cup playoffs.
Since we're congratulating people, congratulations to Jeff Howe.
Howe, NBA championship.
NBA championship.
Just living the dream.
Kevin Garnett dumped a beer on him.
Yeah, we could get, if Rook Howe joined us, he'll join us later this summer for a podcast, and he'll tell us the tales of his championship experience in the Celtics room. Well, yeah.
And he went to the U.S. Open, too, didn't he?
All in the same week. The guy,
he went to Belmont, too, all in the same week.
He covered the first game of the series in Boston on a Thursday, went to Belmont and assassinated Big Brown. Went back to Boston for Sunday night to cover the game 2, went out to L.A. for the games 3, 4, and 5 of that series, and in between those games, he went to Torrey Pines for a day of the U.S. Golf Open, and then he got back for game 6, and the Celtics won the title.
And he can't be with us tonight because he's at Euro 2008, right?
Yeah.
No.
And then he's got to get to Omaha for the College World Series.
They asked Rook Howe to fill in for Tiger at the Buick opening Ron Ball of Michigan this week.
Yeah, there's billboards all over the place.
Yeah, come see Rook.
Come see Jeff Howe.
He's our version of Where's Waldo? Look in the background of any major story.
Hey, look in the background of look at any, well, not any, but a Boston Globe website, if you look at the Celtics locker room photos, he's in the back going through somebody's pants pocket. He should have gone through Big Babies or KGs, but I think he chose Brian Scalabrine.
You can take
yeah.
the kid out of Lowell, but
oh man.
All right. Stanley Cup playoffs. I want to say congratulations to the Detroit Red Wings. Something happened this playoff year that I really like. The best team won. You know, they were the best team. They won the Stanley Cup, and that's what is good. That's how it should be.
I agree. I think, yeah.
I'm that guy who doesn't like it when the number 15 seed upsets some, you know, stupid basketball game and everybody starts to think that George Mason's awesome because they're in the Final Four. You know, if you're awesome, don't go 19-13 in the Trans-Belt America Conference. You know, win. I just – single knockout tournaments are kind of tough. I mean, I just – Even what we've seen the last two Frozen Fours with the third seeds and fourth seeds.
You didn't like Holy Cross over Minnesota? Be honest.
I did not. I would not have liked it if Holy Cross won the national championship.
Okay. You didn't like seeing Michigan State pull a string of upsets and win the national championship? Who doesn't like the underdog? Come on.
I don't like the underdog.
Well, you've made that clear.
I'm just saying.
You're a different breed of cat that way.
I agree. I think.
You know, if they play a seven-game series, Minnesota wins in five against Holy Cross.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
I mean, let's be honest. So,
BC would beat. Do you think BC would beat Michigan State? BC 2007 beats Michigan State?
It would be a long series.
Yeah,
DC in six probably.
It'll be a long series.
Yeah, I would say six or seven.
Yeah, but I mean those. And hockey's a lot different than that stupid basketball thing because all the teams are good. I mean, in a given year, you know, we probably had Michigan State in our top three of our power rankings, and we probably had them out of our top 16. You know, over the course of the year. But, you know, when it comes down to it, the top 10 to 12 teams, there's not a huge gap there like there is from, you know, Minnesota to Holy Cross or, you know, George Mason to Kansas or something like that in basketball. So
yeah, when you let 64 teams in your national tournament, you're going to have a pretty big separation.
So, yeah, that's all I mean by that. But Detroit was freaking awesome. Hank Zetterberg, let me channel my Don Cherry here for a little bit. All you kids out there, and Graves obviously would never say this about a Swedish-born player.
I think he would.
Watch this guy in all three zones. Unbelievable. He scores, he sets guys up, he hits, he defends, he backchecks, he wins faceoffs. He is the most complete player in the league. Certainly there are people have different skill sets, like, you know, your Ovechkins and Crosbys and Phaneufs and those kinds of star players, Iginla, Malkin, etc. But if there is one guy who rates in every single category that you can measure a hockey player on, I think Hank Zetterberg's in, you know, among the best in each category.
So if you were having if you were completely redrafting the NHL, would you take him number one?
No. I would take Ovechkin number one because goals are hard.
Yes, they are.
I mean, I can get a lot of guys to do some of the things that Zetterberg does. You know, I can get a defensive center. I can get a playmaking center. I can get a scoring center. He just happens to be all of them at the same time. But you can't get anybody that can do what Ovechkin can do.
That's true.
So that's how I would answer that question.
Yeah, Hank Zetterberg is... He's a pretty darn good player.
He's great.
He is great.
He's great. And Datsyuk's also very good on his line. I mean, amazing. Amazing. And, of course, Lidstrom is Lidstrom. How about Chris Chelios? You know, kind of, I mean, the way it was phrased a little bit, in the last game of the conference final and heading into the Stanley Cup final, you know, they kind of treated it almost as if he pulled himself out of the lineup. I don't know if that's 100%, you know, really what would happen, but...
What was it against Dallas where... I think it was against Dallas, and I want, you know, it seems like this.
Yeah, they won game six down in Dallas.
Yeah, and it was game five where he had a couple bad changes.
Yeah, yeah, that's
and
exactly
they
it.
Directly led to goals.
Yeah, then he didn't play game six and then didn't want to be in for game one.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think, I mean, do you think that's it for him? He's pulling the chute?
You can never know with him. You never know. It might depend a little bit on what they do. I don't know who their restricted or and unrestricted free agents are on defense. You know,
Stewart, I know, is unrestricted.
Stewart is. I don't know what Cronwall's status is or Lilja. Rafalski, I think, is locked up for a bit. Lidstrom, I think, is locked up for a bit. So we'll see what they get from that. So I think that would maybe depend a little bit on Chelios, and I think that Detroit will also, college hockey fans will see some Jimmy Howard, former Maine goalie, playing a prominent role with in tandem with Chris Osgood for Detroit next season.
Yes, I think you're right. I think you're
right.
There
you go.
By the way,
they drafted a goalie, didn't they? Didn't the Red Wings pick a goalie in the first round?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, they did.
I think maybe it was the only goalie taken in the first round.
Thomas, no, there was a couple goalies that went in the first round.
Were there? Okay.
Yes, Thomas McCollum was the kid's name, and I think, you know, if I'm not mistaken, he's from Buffalo, or from the Buffalo area, and he played for Guelph, actually.
Guelph Storm.
Here are your unrestricted Red Wings, according to TSN. Lilja is unrestricted. And Stewart and Chelios on defense. And Garrett Stafford, believe it or not. So that's the...
so that means they return Cronwall, Lidstrom, Rafalski.
And Lebda.
Lebda, that's the guy I was missing.
And... unrestricted, or I'm sorry, restricted, nah. Jonathan Erickson, who I don't think played, and Kyle Quincy, who was kind of an AHL guy.
Black Aces, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Detroit's good anyway. They're good. I'm happy they won the Stanley Cup.
They are good.
We talked a little bit about Jeff Howe in Boston. I was able to watch, well, I shouldn't say that. I was able to watch a lot of the NBA Finals. I chose to watch the trophy presentation. What a vastly, vastly different operation than when the Stanley Cup and Conn Smythe Awards are presented at the end of the Stanley Cup Finals. Holy mackerel, what a difference.
Yeah.
Hockey's better.
Yes. Yeah, it was
first guy to touch the trophy at the NBA trophy ceremony, the owner of the team, from the commissioner. I mean, come on. I mean, Bettman, I don't know if it's because he can't lift it or what, but he doesn't even touch the thing. You know, he gets a picture with it and says, "Here you go, Nick Lidstrom. You know, here you go, and take it away, Rod Brindamore, whoever it might be." And that's pretty awesome.
I did like the Celtics winning by, like, 38 points to clinch the title.
That was pretty cool.
Finally, we had a basketball equivalent of the final game of the 91 Stanley Cup Finals, which I will always remember because it was the night of my college graduation when the Penguins beat the North Stars 8-0 to win the cup.
Hello.
They were drinking champagne on the bench with 18 minutes to go.
Oh, yeah.
Smoking cigars.
Yeah.
Does anybody remember Mike Peluso in 95 during Game 4 of the Devils-Red Wings series? How
Mike
broken
Peluso.
Down he was?
Alaska Anchorage.
The last 3 or 4 minutes, he couldn't go out and play. He was, like, literally shaking and tearful because he had realized that he was going to win the Stanley Cup.
Wow.
Yeah. If you can see the video, it's pretty very emotional. It's pretty good.
Devils were up 1-0, which, you know,
game
on
over.
That, on that team was like the equivalent of an 8-0 lead.
So I'm pretty sure the score of that game was 5-2. I don't know why I remember that. Probably because
Mike Peluso and Neil Broughton, two ex-WCHA guys, getting a lift the cup for the first and only time that night.
Bobby Carpenter was on that team.
Was Bobby Jim Carpenter. Dowd on that team?
Jimmy Dowd scored OT, or not OT winner, a goal in the last minute of the third period.
Rick, New Jersey.
And earlier in that series.
Was that when Danton Cole with them?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Well, Ken Danico was obviously there.
Yeah, their D was Albelin, Danico, Stevens, Driver.
Bruce Driver, Wisconsin Badger.
Obviously, Niedermeyer.
Let me be technically
correct. And Sean Chambers.
Oh, jeez.
Let me be technically correct.
I'm not looking this up. I was a Devils
I described Peluso as a WCHA guy because he played at Alaska Anchorage. He played at Alaska Anchorage at a time when I believe they were in the Great West Hockey League with U.S. International and Northern Arizona. So not exactly a WCHA guy.
Peluso, McKay, Holik was one line.
Randy McKay, Breland. Michigan Tech. There you go.
Carpenter, Breland, Broughton. Obviously, Claude Lemieux.
Some Russian.
Ralston, I think, played on that team. Raleigh.
You think?
I don't think so.
I'm trying to quickly scan the NHL guide and record book.
They must have had some more European guys.
Speaking of the Broughton brothers, think about Aaron Broughton for a second. He spends most of his NHL career playing for the Devils on those mid to late 80s Devils teams that were uniform.
The Mickey Mouse
horrible.
Teams, as Wayne said.
The Mickey Mouse teams. His brother gets on the team for half of one season and wins the cup.
Tough darts. That's what I call that.
Yeah.
Let's see who we got here.
Oh,
any other Roseau guys we can talk about tonight since we covered Aaron Ness already, too? I haven't talked this much about Roseau guys in my life.
Scott Stevens.
Of course you haven't.
Scott Stevens was the kid.
You used to talk about Roseau girls a lot.
Why won't she call?
Danton Cole was on that team in 95.
There you go.
Let's see. Kevin Dean was on that team. Billy Guerin. Did you mention
that? Oh, that clown, yeah.
he was at, you know that, well, we'll get to that later. We'll get to that later. Chris Terreri was on that team.
Chris Terreri, Providence Friars.
Chris McAlpine was on that team.
Okay.
Oh.
Stefan Richie, Ralston, of course. Geez, who can forget Valerie Zelipukin?
Zelly.
The Z-Man.
So that's
I thought he might have left after the Rangers loss in 94.
Oh, he was still on that team. You know who else was on that team, according to the NHL Guide and Record Book, was Tom Chorsky from the University,
that is
of,
correct. That
University
is correct.
Of Minnesota.
Two ex-Gophers on that team. Wow. Well, three. Broughton, McAlpine, Chorsky.
Did Sean Chambers, he might have played at Fairbanks.
I think he may have.
I think he is.
I think he also may not have.
Well,
so we've got both answers covered.
I'm just saying. Bobby Holik. Did you get Bobby Holik? John McLean.
Oh, Johnny Mack. He's the best. He's assistant coach for that team now. Peluso McKay Holik was the third line.
He
was
not have.
Freaking awesome.
Well, then what line was Lemieux on?
Claude probably played with Richie and Ralston or something like that or whatever. That Devils team relied on Claude Lemieux for scoring. he was there to do some other things. You know, it was a little different when he went to Denver and played for the Avalanche there when they had, you know, things loaded up pretty good. But, yeah, he was the top-line guy for that Devils team.
Pretty good
Columbus
career.
General Manager Scott Housen, Columbus Blue Jackets General Manager Scott Housen said, "We believe R.G. Umberger is a top six forward in this league." after the Blue Jackets acquired Umberger, and he will return to his college town of Columbus, Ohio.
You can pick up all those classes he missed.
That's true.
Where is he from originally? Is he a Toronto kid?
Pittsburgh,
isn't he like from
PA.
California or something?
Pittsburgh, PA.
Pittsburgh, PA.
Speaking of Bill Guerin, that brings up another question we came up with from the draft.
Oh, yeah, this was exciting.
Yeah, this is actually a very good question. With college ties, go ahead.
Looking out on the draft floor, oh, you know what, let me throw this one out there because I've been telling everyone that I've talked to. The best part of the NHL draft is in the first round on the Friday night every year, the Phoenix Coyotes are about to make their pick, and it's not like the NBA draft or NFL draft where one guy announces all the picks. Each team announces their own first-round pick. So the Phoenix Coyotes are on the clock, kind of. We should get to that, too. but as the Coyotes are preparing to make their pick, you know, each team also goes up with, like, 10 guys, which is crazy. But so they start their little parade, and by the time that they start walking up the stairs to the stage, you know, you hear kind of a golf clap and pleasant applause throughout the arena, and it starts to spread. And then the ovation grows in sound level and excitement, and people start to stand and cheer. And all this happens as Wayne Gretzky makes his way to the podium. And he gets about a 40-second standing ovation every year before he makes that pick. And it happened in Columbus, and it happened in Ottawa, and other ones that I've seen on TV. This is with 210s. I've seen it in person, and I just love it. I think it's the greatest thing of the whole weekend. Seeing Gretz and people, you know, people know, and he deserves it. I mean, he's the greatest scorer that ever played the game. So anyway, I enjoy that.
Yeah,
that got me thinking when you look down on the draft floor and Steve Yzerman's there working with the Red Wings, and Brett Hull is the assistant general manager with the Dallas Stars, and Glenn Anderson and Kevin Lowe working with the Oilers, and, you know, just a number of other players, even guys like Ron Francis and Rick Tocchet and Mike Ricci and others that I'm sure I don't recognize, and some of the older players, you know, like Doug Risebrough and George McPhee. I sat there and I said, I wonder how many career goals are on that draft floor. You know? Remarkable. That's remarkable.
Yeah, it was. It was something else. And Kevin Stevens, obviously, was there.
Yeah, yeah. I thought, you know, and Bill Guerin was there.
Bill Guerin was there, yes.
Yeah, whether he deserved him or not, he's got 500 goals.
And
I'm hammering on Bill Guerin.
Where's the love, Glady? Man.
You don't have to.
You know what? Bill Guerin has just been one of those guys I've never gotten him. I don't get it.
You said too many nice things about BC earlier. Now we need to pay back, or what?
No, as far as I'm concerned, Bill Guerin played his entire career as a New York Met. Like, get over it. Like, you're a loser. I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't know.
What's going back to that, how many goals were on the we're on the floor. I did mention that Ron Hextall was on the floor, too.
Yeah, that's true.
He was on the draft floor, so he had, what, two? Three?
Two, I think.
I remember the one pretty vividly.
Yeah, anyway, but something to think about.
Here's another thing to think about at the draft, and you kind of touched on it. You know how they say when a team is on the clock?
Yeah.
At the NHL draft, there's no clock.
Yeah, there is no clock.
There is no clock. And so I looked in the draft guide, which is actually on CD this year, so the NHL is going green and saving paper. It doesn't even say in there how long teams get for picks.
But at one point during the first round on Friday night, they said, you've got 1 minute to make your pick.
How would you know?
Well, every team's draft table has a computer on it.
Oh, yeah.
And they select They have to punch in their selection on the computer before they announce it. So I think that's probably how they know. That mechanism probably has a clock on it. But if it does not, then we have a huge breaking conspiracy that we need to unearth.
I think Gary Bettman's up there with an egg timer.
So you couldn't have a situation like, and Bus, you may remember this, the Vikings got themselves into at the NFL draft about 10 years ago, where they actually didn't turn their pick in on time.
Yeah.
Like their 15 minutes expired and two teams jumped ahead of them.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was awesome.
Probably couldn't have that.
They still got the guy they wanted, and they didn't have to pay him as much.
Gee, I miss Red McCombs.
Kevin Williams, too. Good pick.
Yeah. One of them was Bryant McKinney, and one of them was Kevin Williams. They did it 2 years in a row.
It's all right, he's
McKinney still play there, Chess?
Yeah. He had kind of an off year last year, but Sports Illustrated just picked him to win the Super Bowl, so hey.
So they'll be 6-10.
Yeah, so they'll be looking at a good, solid 7-9 season.
Wait, let's get back to this here. They picked Bryant McKinney to win the Super Bowl?
Well they picked the Vikings to win.
The whole team, not just Bryant McKinney.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Paul Zimmerman, Dr. Z.
Dr. Z.
Sports Illustrated fame.
Oh, that's all you need to say.
Yeah. Last year, he started off the column by noting that last year he picked the Saints and they went 7-9. So.
Oh, there you go.
Who are the Vikings' good players?
Adrian
Besides
Peterson?
The running back, they got they got the running back.
They got Jared Allen now at defensive end. They've got a very good run stopping defense and they've got a very good running game. The huge question mark is Tavares Jackson at quarterback.
Wow.
And they have Grand Forks, North Dakota native Brooks Bollinger backing them up. So,
who's their kicker?
Not Rich Carlos anymore.
Not Gary Anderson.
Not Paul Edinger. They had him briefly.
I don't even know who the kicker is, to be honest.
Not
with you.
Donald.
I know who it is.
It's Ryan Longwell.
Ryan Longwell. Therefore, the Vikings will win the Super Bowl. Because they have the most dynamic athlete in the NFL on their team. Michael Vick has a Ryan Longwell poster on his bedroom wall. You did not know that.
You mean on his cell wall?
Yeah, something like that.
He's using it to conceal a tunnel he's making.
Oh, man.
I saw Shawshank too many times, apparently.
So.
Yeah. They drafted a quarterback, though, I think. Didn't they draft a quarterback?
Yeah, John David Booty.
Oh.
USC.
Bootylicious.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't feel really strong. They're not going to win the Super Bowl.
I don't think it'll happen in my lifetime.
What if they move Longwell
to
quarterback?
What they need to do is move him to wide receiver.
They've got Brett Sarvian now.
Bernard Berrien is not
talented.
Bernard Berrien. I'm
Bernard
sorry.
Berrien
yeah,
is not
too.
A number one right wide receiver.
Not they had to have a good wide receiver.
Yeah, they had a kid out of Marshall. They traded him. I can't remember what they got for him, but wasn't much.
They had a guy who only caught touchdown passes.
Yeah, they did. They also had the Q, Qadree Ismail, the missile.
Okay, one last tiny bit of deterioration from me, and you guys may find this amusing, and if you don't, I don't care.
It would be just like every other day.
That's right. I have a cabin up in northern Minnesota, and we have a few dead trees, and I've been cutting down a few dead trees here and there. And my wife insisted that I wear a hard hat while doing so, just for safety's sake. And I thought I was going to have to go buy a hard hat, and then she reminded me. She went down in the basement and brought out the Aganis Arena hard hat I got in 2004 when they gave us the tour of the construction site. So I feel it's pretty safe to say I will be the only guy in Aiken County this summer wearing an Aganis Arena hard hat.
They gave you a real hard hat?
They gave us real actual hard hats with the Aganis Arena logo on them and the BU hockey logo on the side.
I might have actually gone on that tour if I would have known that.
Saturday morning of the Boston Frozen Tour.
Nah, I wouldn't have gone.
Yeah,
John
Barkin, we were busy.
Sherry Skelko and I on a bus hungover. It was a good time.
Yeah, we were busy being hungover.
I was still drunk.
That was the morning after the famous Boston Barkin Bash. So.
Number one.
Yeah, at first
it was outstanding.
If you guys visit Vikings.com, you're going to see two players featured carrying the flag in the top of their website index page. One is Adrian Peterson, the other is Ryan Longwell. Swear to God. It's the best.
That's how we found out Glad he had hacked into their site.
That's because they're the only two people on that team who score.
Oh, wait, we got a change here. I refreshed and got Matt Burke instead of Longwell.
Matt Burke? Harvard University.
This is why they are not going to win. Matt Burke.
Matt Burke's daughter and my daughter go to the same dance studio, have you know, so. I actually see Matt Burke now and then.
On that note.
All right, it's time to wrap things up, I think.
I have one more note, though.
Go for it.
Just wanted to, you know, we were talking about the Stanley Cup. We talked a little bit about the NBA. Your last four major sports champions. Going backwards, Celtics, Red Wings, New York Giants, Red Sox. It's like 1945 all over again. Or 19... Pretty, that's a nice old school mix there.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
Because they're Red Sox, it's like 1918 all over.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what about our Cubs this year? How are we going to do?
Yeah, they'll blow it.
We have to get on board.
They'll blow it.
I don't know. Yeah, they probably will. They will.
They just
swept
the White
Sox. Season is over.
God bless them for doing so.
Did they lose again to the Brewers?
Hell yeah.
Tonight. Well, you know, Ben Sheets throws a... What did he throw last night?
Four-hitter.
Yeah.
Three hits were in the same inning. Single, single, double play, run scores, infield hit, and then they would suck after that. So.
On my trip to Denver a few weeks back, I got some really good seats to see the Rockies and the Brewers down the third baseline. I got to say this. Watching Prince Fielder play is like watching Turtle from Entourage play baseball. Just... You know, the uniform's kind of too big, and he's kind of a little heavy to be playing the game, and kind of runs real slow, but just looks like he's up there having fun.
You should come see me play softball if you think that's fun.
Yeah, I've always thought of Prince Fielder as kind of the Gladdy of the National League.
Yeah, Gladdy doesn't pay his taxes either.
Gladdy, do you still talk to your dad?
Who?
Did you ever live in Japan?
No. No. Okay. But I was incarcerated there.
Prince Fielder
had sushi for lunch.
Two inside,
long story.
Inside the park home runs.
That's true. That is true.
He had one
all
against
right.
the Twins last year, and the Onion came out with a headline the next day saying, Prince Fielder dies from inside the park home run.
That was pretty good.
He's a large man. He's not svelte.
All right, let's put a bow tie on this finely assembled package. We hope you enjoyed some serious, legitimate college hockey talk, and... some not-so-serious deterioration, where we covered a variety of topics, such as the Vikings Super Bowl chances.
Zero.
Ottawa as a potential Frozen Four city. Or John Cole being funny. And the Detroit
Denver
Red Wings.
Boone.
And Denver,
Denver Boone.
So there you go. Please wear your hard hat if you're doing any forestry work, and... stay tuned to Inside College Hockey all summer long for continuing news, updates, and podcasts.